You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The stars were out last night. Good morning, everyone. Welcome into First Take. Stephen A. is off today. We actually gave him a day off, but we got a lot of voices here. Shannon Sharp, Rebecca Lobo, there they are. Good morning. Get to them in just a moment. Jeff Passan and Jessica Mendoza will be here momentarily. We've got the latest on Shohei Ohtani. We'll dive into that, plus a ton of NBA and NFL to get into. Good morning, Rebecca. Morning, Shannon.
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
All right, let's dive right into it, guys. The action on the hardwood. The women's tourney is loaded with star power. Let's get into it. Caitlin Clark scored 32 points to lead one seed Iowa into the Sweet 16. Clark's performance helped Iowa survive one of its worst offensive performances of the season to beat West Virginia 64-54. Meanwhile, Paige Beckers carried an injury-riddled UConn team that's missing a bunch of their stars for the tourney, also dropping 32 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals, and a block in the 72-64 win over Syracuse. Gino Auriemma with high praise for Paige.
We have the best player in America. And, you know, just saying that because the numbers in this world of analytics, the numbers say that she is. And the whole stat sheet says that she is. And everybody that watched knows it. And we're fortunate.
It's great to see her back out there. Rebecca, I want to start with you. Who was more impressive last night? Was it Caitlin Clark or Paige Beckers?
Well, it's pretty incredible what each young woman was able to do in their games yesterday, because certainly UConn does not advance past the second round without Paige Beckers not only scoring her 32 points, she accounted for 65% of UConn's scoring. And like she has done all season long, she did it in a really efficient manner. And of course, when you look at Caitlin Clark, there's no way Iowa advances out of the second round without her. It's so incredible when you'll appreciate these two women. When they were both freshmen, the question was, which is the best freshman in the country? And then that year, Paige Beckers was the player of the year. And then we've, over the course of the last 2 years, Paige Beckers has dealt with injuries. We've seen Caitlin Clark emerge as sort of an otherworldly force on the offensive end of the floor. So certainly, they are the most important pieces for each of their teams, both capable of leading their teams to a Final Four. And I'm sure Lisa Bluter thinks she has the best player in the country, just like Gino Auriemma says he does.
Well, today, Rebecca, Tuesday edition is the teeth edition. That's why you and I are on today, because we both have a nice set of teeth. So Tuesday is the teeth edition for ESPN.
I love it. Bright whites. Let's go.
Two things can be true, Rebecca, and I want to piggyback what you said. I believe Paige Beckers had the better game last night. I believe Caitlin Clark had the better season this season. Although Caitlin Clark is not greatly terribly efficient. Sometimes you look at the stats and she's 12 of 30, and we just look at the 35 points or the 40 points she scored when it took her 35 shots to get that. But Caitlin Clark was the better player this year. She's been the better player this year, although Paige Beckers had the better game last night. And to also echo what you said, neither team is going to advance had their superstar not stepped up and had superstar numbers last night. And that's okay. I get it, Gino. You're right. Hype your young lady up. She's incredibly talented. Paige Beckers, she was an All-American her freshman season. She was Player of the Year. Okay, Caitlin Clark said, you know what, Paige? You got me. But over the last 3 years, and you're right, Paige Beckers has dealt with injuries. But Caitlin Clark, what she's done over the last 2 years, I don't care nothing about no analytics. I don't care nothing about stats. I see better than I hear. I hear what you're saying, Gino, but I know what I've seen over the last 2 years from Caitlin Clark.
Rebecca, in some ways, I feel like it's hard to compare them, right? Because obviously with Caitlin Clark, what people point at when people, the argument is she the GOAT? She's doing more with less in terms of the talent around her. Obviously, Paige Beckers, we talked about it before we started the show, 5 major injuries to UConn, also doing more with less right now and stepping up. But Shannon, to your point, we haven't really seen Paige for two seasons, right?
Correct.
She missed two seasons, so it's really hard to compare the two of them and, hey, who's the greatest? Because she hasn't played as much.
You're absolutely right. And plus, she's just getting her legs back. You keep having these debilitating injuries, and she has to build those leg muscles back up again, get her feel about, like, you know what? This body is able to do what it normally did. These legs are able to carry me, and I could do things like I once could. Caitlin Clark has not had, to knock on wood, has not had to deal with the injuries that Paige Bueckers had. And so for her to come back and play at the level in which she's playing at, to become an All-American again, after dealing with two ACL injuries, yeah, I think that's kudos. I think we should commend her for the way that she's played. But I do believe Caitlin Clark had the better season, although Paige Bueckers had the better game last night.
Yeah, and Rebecca, so much star power in this tournament, and the ratings show it, right? Numbers have almost doubled. There's so much interest. I love it, covering the women's game here. Rebecca, let me ask you this. So this is the matchup that Stephen A. most wanted, because a little drama with it. But what are the chances that we're headed for an LSU versus Iowa Elite Eight matchup?
Well, we're one Sweet 16 away from getting there, and that was the shocking thing when the brackets were first released, was the assumption was that you would not have a potential for LSU and Iowa to meet until a Final Four, but we could have it. It's going to be a tough road, though, for both of those teams, because Iowa is playing a very good Colorado team, and it's interesting to note these two teams met in the Sweet 16 a season ago. It was a one-point game at the half, and Iowa ended up beating them by 10 points, but Colorado in that game, 21 offensive rebounds. They made things difficult for Iowa, and they're a little bit of a similar team defensively to what we saw from West Virginia yesterday, the team that gave Iowa so much difficulty. And on the other side, for LSU, they are the 3 seed, and before they would get to that Elite Eight matchup, they will have to go through UCLA. UCLA is a team that has all the pieces to win a national championship. In particular, their best player is inside, 6'7", Lauren Betts. They have a complement of experienced guards around her. They can shoot threes. They can, score out in transition. They can defend as well. So we may be on a collision course for that matchup that I think a lot of people would like to see, but certainly tune in for their Sweet 16 games, because they will not be easy for either of those teams.
Yeah, Rebecca, you have to look at, when I look at Iowa, I don't know if they can keep winning these games in which they don't get to what they normally score in the regular season. They led D1 women's basketball in scoring about 93 points a game. They scored less than 70. They're going to need to get up and down. They're going to need to get into a free-flowing game, because it's a lot more difficult, because Caitlin Clark is so heavily involved in their offense. It's so hard for them to get easy buckets in the half-court set. So they're going to need to get more up and down. Paige Bueckers, 60 points, 25 rebounds, and 10 assists through her first two games in the tournament. She's playing lights out. They're playing really well. But in order for, especially Iowa, in order for them to get to the national championship game, guys, I'm going to believe that Caitlin Clark is going to have to do what Cheryl Swoops did for that Texas Tech team. And we know, I think she scored 47 points in the championship game, but she was outstanding throughout the tournament. I think she averaged over 30. And she single-handedly, because I cannot name another female on that, a young lady that was on that team, Caitlin Clark and Paige Bueckers, because Bueckers' next best player had gone out, well, she tore an ACL, even though Paige didn't have the gang type of game. And the first, Paige Bueckers, I believe, has more help than Caitlin Clark. To make a long story short, I believe she has more help than Caitlin Clark.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
And Shannon, one of the things that's really interesting with Iowa is this is a team that not only led the nation in scoring, but led the nation in three-pointers made per game. They averaged 11 made threes per game. Yesterday, Caitlin Clark made 5 of their threes. It was the only 5 threes they made. Only one other time this season was Caitlin Clark the only one who was able to hit from deep, and that was a loss for Iowa to Kansas State. They had a game just a couple of weeks ago at the end of the regular season where Iowa made 22 threes in that game. She certainly needs to lead the way, but needs all of the shooters around her to continue to be able to hit from deep, which they couldn't do yesterday. But a team that's capable of making 22 threes is certainly capable of making it to a national championship.
Absolutely. And this is only their fourth win, a fourth in 12 games in which they've scored that few points and won the ball game.
Yep. Yeah. Let me jump in here. So, Rebecca, don't be fooled. So Shannon might be from the South, but he's fully Hollywood. I mean, he's all in. He's all in all things L.A. Tell me about USC and Juju Watkins. So SC back in the Sweet 16. This is the first time since 1994. That is a long time. How impressive is Juju? What type of talent is she?
You know, we hear the phrase generational talent, and she certainly is one of those. Juju is a force to be reckoned with, and USC is a force to be reckoned with. I was fortunate to go out and call the Pac-12 championship game. And from the Pac-12 tournament on, this team has been outstanding. And all year long, Juju has been doing her thing, and second in the nation in scoring, averaging 27 per game. One of the things that makes her so lethal is you simply cannot stop her. And she's a different offensive force than Caitlin Clark. She's not taking the logo threes, but she is coming down using her handle. She can get to any spot on the floor. She's unbelievable drawing contact and getting to the free throw line, but she has really good, talented players around her. Lindsey Gottlieb brought in three graduate transfers, all from different Ivy League schools. At times this season, she's called them Juju and the Nerds or Juju and the Ivies, and those young women have assumed their roles perfectly. They've let Juju be the star, let her be the focus of this team, but a player in particular to keep an eye on is one of those grad student transfers, and the one from Harvard, that's Mackenzie Forbes. She has been shooting lights out.
Yes.
When Juju struggled in the Pac-12 championship game, her only game all season where she was held to single digits, Mackenzie Forbes was a force, and she was named the Pac-12 tournament most outstanding performer. So yes, Juju is leading the
I think dealing with a little bit of a technical difficulty there with Rebecca. Rebecca, thank you so much. Shannon, yeah, you jump in.
Yeah, but we look at Juju and all the Caitlin Clark, Paige Becker, they're great off the bounce. They're just not it. Can they take the ball, can get all the way to the rim. They have great outside shots. They can shoot the three ball. And that's what makes these young ladies so unique, is that all three are great off the bounce. Juju has been sensational as a freshman, and she's only going to get better because now she has a taste and knows what it takes to get to and to get to that spot. She can get to any spot on the court, get her shot off, and then when you hug up on her, she can get by you and get to the rim. It's been fun, and that's why I believe the women's tournament is doing so well in the ratings, because the talent, Rebecca, when you first went to college, all the ladies went to UConn or they huddled up at Tennessee. Now the talent is spread throughout. So we see Juju at USC. We see Paige at UConn. We see a Caitlin Clark. We see a Cameron Brink. We see a Angel Reese. So the talent is spread out, and it's like, okay, it's not a foregone conclusion. Yeah. It's going to be Tennessee winning. It's going to be UConn winning. Now we really do not know. We think South Carolina, but with those three young ladies, anything is possible.
Yeah, Shannon, don't get it twisted. I mean, Storrs is still the basketball capital.
Whatever.
Women had five major injuries. I don't have time to get into all of it. So the talent's still there. We're just hurt. But, yeah, it's spread out. It's sprinkled elsewhere. But
yes,
we still
yes.
dominate in case you were concerned.
All of a sudden, you don't have Maya Moore and Tina Charles and Stewie and DT and Rebecca Lobo and Sue Bird. You don't have all of those loaded up at one institution.
Laundry list. Absolutely. Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us this morning. It was a lot of fun. We'll talk to you soon. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV
Navy is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
We've got some breaking news this morning. NFL owners approved a massive revamp of the kickoff play Tuesday, opting for a format that originated in the XFL. The new alignment rules are designed to reverse more than a decade of declining return rates while also lowering concussion rates, with player safety being paramount here. Shannon, what's your reaction to this?
Man, I'm glad this was instituted in the 90s because I'm not so sure I could have made it to the NFL. I made the team and became the player that I became because I got an opportunity to play on special teams, which means, hey, I could line up, and when the kicker took off, I took off with him, and I was in a full sprint. By the time he kicked the ball, I was in an all-out sprint. I understand what the league is trying to do. They're trying to cut down on the concussions, but I don't understand how this, considering, look at where they're lining up. I mean, I don't know how you increase the return rates when the guys are already right there on top of him. So I thought they was like have it like, okay, you can't take off until he catches the ball and you were lining up in your normal position. At this, I don't understand how you increase the field position with the guys so close. I understand the collision. They're not going to be nearly as violent because, you know, you're not as far having a far enough start to take off running with. But I get what they're trying to do. They say the kickoff is the most dangerous because of the high rate of speed that's generated. Yeah. More concussions happen on this play than any other play. But I don't understand how you think you're going to get better field position and better returns with a setup like this.
We shall see. We'll keep it going here, Shannon. The Cowboys continue to have a quiet offseason, to say the least, and Jerry Jones isn't fazed, saying, I think that we have been in a situation where we can get it done with lesser. More doesn't necessarily beat Green Bay. There are other things, maybe having it better strategically in different spots, but more than necessarily beat them either. So we're going to be asked to do some things different because we've got some different players. Coach Mike McCarthy is ready for his team to take that jump.
I'm a big believer in a second and third year jump. You know, we have some young players. We got some guys coming back off of IR that were young players that we're excited about. So we are definitely improving. You know, we're just not part of the free agent market right now.
So is that what Cowboys fans can hang their hat on, the fact that there are guys coming back that are going to be getting better because people keep waiting for the Cowboys to make moves?
Well, I think that, and also, there's a lot left. So, I mean, it's, you know, you'll probably have a market right before the draft or post-draft, and then you got your June 1st market, and, you know, obviously we'll have another draft class. So I have great confidence in our roster.
All right, we bring in Booger McFarland, Mike Tannenbaum. Boog, Mike T, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Shannon, no surprise, we had comments from Jerry and then Mike McCarthy as well. Is Jerry asking Dak to do too much, Shannon?
I thought they were all in. Booger, you remember after that loss to Green Bay and Mike McCarthy at the draft? We're all in on this season. Then all of a sudden, Stephen Jones comes out and says, that means we're all in on our guys, the Micahs and the CeeDee Lamb. Now you're saying we need to do more with less. So let me get this straight, Booger. I'm struggling to feed my family of four, and now I get a pay cut, and now I'm asked to do more with that money. I got less money, but you want me to do more. So in other words, the talent, we had more. We didn't win. We're going to give you less, Dak, and we want you to win more. I need somebody to help me make sense of this because it makes absolutely none to me. Look, if you're going to talk about, so if you want to do less and win more, but that doesn't necessarily mean Green Bay, I'm trying to, so what are we doing here? Boog, Mike, can y'all tell me what Jerry and Steven are trying to do? If your objective is not to beat Green Bay, who ramshackled you last year, if your job is not to beat San Francisco, who was the representative in the Super Bowl for the NFC, so what are we talking about? What are we actually doing? I'm confused as to what they're trying to do and the logic behind it.
Well, usually, guys, I think teams that jump out there on the first few days of free agency, they make mistakes. I get it. There's splashes, and we talk about them. Man, the Eagles, and they got Saquon. Man, they're going to win the Super Bowl. Usually, those high-priced deals are mistakes. So I'm not as concerned about the Cowboys' lack of involvement in free agency so far. I'm going to judge their offseason once it's complete, after the June 1st free agency period, after the draft. Because right now, they don't have a running back. They're missing some key pieces on defense. They need a big defensive tackle, among other things. So I'll judge them at that point. To the point where Jerry is saying, we need everybody to do more. We need our young players to step up and do more. We need Dak Prescott to do more. He's right. To whom much is given, much is expected. We expect these guys that are making this money, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, Dak Prescott, DeMarcus Lawrence, our stars have to be stars when you're making $15, $20 million a year. So I truly understand what Jerry's saying, because these guys want to be paid like the top at their position. We've been talking on this network all offseason. When is Dak Prescott going to get a new contract? Dak has the Cowboys over the fire. And I truly understand all that. But at some point, if you're the owner, if you're the GM, and all these guys are stars and at the top of their position, don't you have to ask them to play better? Shouldn't you improve year over year? Shouldn't your level of play take a step up each and every year, especially when you're in your prime? So I understand what Jerry's saying. And I think as fans, we have to sit back, and as analysts, we have to judge the Cowboys offseason or the fact that they're all in once this is complete. We haven't even gotten to the draft yet, guys. Let's get through the draft, see who they draft, see where they are, see who they add at the end of free agency, and see who they go to training camp with. And then we can judge the Cowboys based on the comment. I think we're rushing to judgment based on our opinions of what all in is and based on our involvement of the headlines. Hey, they haven't signed X, Y, Z as far as a player.
Booger, hey, got if somebody... Mike, let me. I'm gonna let you go, Booger. If somebody says when the next time I see Booger, it's on sight. They walk up to you and slap you, and then you say, "Well, I don't know. I didn't know what he meant." He said that Jerry Jones said they're going to be all in. He said that it ain't no ESPN analyst,
right? Now, Shannon, what all in can mean hey, we're going to keep Micah Parsons. We're going to keep CeeDee Lamb. What they're asking Dak Prescott to do is the very definition of greatness. Look at Kansas City. Tyreek Hill graduates, arguably the best receiver in the NFL. What do? They win back-to-back championships. So when more of the money is going to less of the players, you expect your great players to do more. And that's exactly what Dak Prescott's job description is. Now, as it relates to their offseason, the only grade we could give them is a grade of incomplete. I expect them to take a running back in the draft. Maybe it's Jonathan Brooks from Texas, Blake Corum, who knows. But they'll draft a running back. And let's give them credit for this, guys. They've been opportunistic. A couple years ago, everyone's like, well, they need a receiver. They go out in season. They trade for Amari Cooper. So I think we have a long way to go. And I think as hard as this offseason's been, guys, could you imagine if Micah Parsons or CeeDee Lamb ever graduated from Dallas? You know, that would be much too much for us to deal with. So the point is, they're making a decision. We're going to keep these great players. And, yeah, I'd like to see them sign Derrick Henry or A.J. Dillon, but there's still more of the offseason to come.
But I'm confused. Y'all said Dak needs to take that next level. No matter what level he gets to, he's never getting on the level with Patrick Mahomes. Y'all keep saying, Tyreek graduated. You're talking about right now, you can make a case that Patrick Mahomes might be the third greatest quarterback to ever play the game. And you think Dak can get to that level? Booger, you keep saying, we got to see post June 1st. We got to see what they do in the draft. There's a reason why. We all went to school, Boog. You know what happened? When you got your school clothes late, everybody done tried them pants on. There was a reason why there was only two or three sizes left. Because everybody had them picked over, yeah. And you was getting what's left. And your clothes didn't fit when you went back to school on the first day.
Yeah, but players aren't like school clothes, Shannon. I think the history of free agency tells us this. If you jump out there early paying somebody else's rejects or somebody that somebody else didn't want, because that's who's out there in free agency, right? Because anybody that the team wanted to keep, they've already paid. So everybody that these teams are signing in free agency are players that other teams have already decided they didn't want. That's why a lot of those signings usually fail. So that's what's different between free agency and school. Absolutely. That's what's different between free agency and school clothes. Okay, school clothes, those school clothes, okay, they put out the best and they're brand new. These players are rejects that other teams don't want. That's the difference.
I know a guy that was a reject. Reggie White was a free agent. Deion Sanders was a free agent. Shannon Sharp was a free agent. Peyton Manning was a free agent. Nobody. Oh, so they're rejects. Now, is that what you want to live? You want to live on that island?
Three of the four you named are great players, Shannon. And Peyton Manning, at the end of his career in Denver, wasn't the same Peyton Manning.
The last year he wasn't the same. He won a league MVP. He threw 55 touchdowns with 5,400 yards. He was a two-time first-team All-Pro. Are you sure you want to go with that one if you stay in there?
I'll give you that one. We're naming four players in the last 40 years, Shannon. Come on, man. Like, we're not talking about guy every year. There haven't been guys in free agency every year that hit. We're talking about four players in the last 40 years.
Go ahead, Mike T.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's another big X factor that we didn't get to. They lost a great coach in Dan Quinn, and they lost him within the division. That may be more consequential than any of these moves because, again, they're going to find a running back. They're going to find a starting center. But look at the transformational job Dan Quinn did taking over from Mike Nolan on the defensive side of the ball.
What about that offensive coach? What about that offensive coordinator? They kept him because he said that they were going to run the football more because that's why he got Kellen Moore up out of there. He didn't like all that throwing the ball around. We were going to get back to the basic. You look at our team in Green Bay when we won the championship, we ran the football. What happened to running the football, Mike T? What happened to running the football, Booger? That's what he promised. If it's a lie, he told it. Did he not tell Jerry Jones he wanted to run the football more and they ran the football less? Yes or no?
They ran the football more, and Dak Prescott had a better season last year than he did the year before. So Mike McCarthy stayed true to his promise because the quarterback was better. May not have put up the same numbers, but you can't tell me Dak Prescott wasn't better last year than he was the year before. And the Cowboys' fault last year wasn't their offense. It was their defense because their defense was too small. The defense was built to play with a lead. They had a safety playing linebacker, Shannon. They couldn't stop the run.
Better in the regular season, not in the playoffs.
Whose fault was that? That they had a linebacker, that they had a strong safety playing linebacker.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Let's get you up to speed on a developing story that continues to dominate sports. Shohei Ohtani spoke through his new interpreter with the Dodgers for the first time yesterday, saying he's never bet on sports and that he didn't instruct his now former interpreter, Ipe Mitsuhara, to wire money from his account to pay a bookmaker. Mitsuhara initially told ESPN Ohtani agreed to pay his debts, but Ohtani said Monday, all of this has been a complete lie. The longtime interpreter is accused of stealing $4.5 million from Ohtani to cover a gambling debt. Ohtani signed a $700 million deal with the Dodgers this offseason. Here's more from Ohtani yesterday.
まず初めに僕自身は何かに賭けたりとか誰かに代わってそのスポーツイベントに賭けたりとかそれをまた頼んだりっていうことはないですし僕の口座からブックメーカーに対して誰かに送金を依頼したことももちろん全くありません正直ショックという まあ、言葉がまあ正しいとは思わないですし、まあそれ以上のこう、うまく言葉では表せないような、感覚でこの1週間ぐらいはずっと過ごしてきたので、今はそれをうまく言葉にするのは、難しいなという思っています。
Okay, a lot to unpack here. Jeff Passan joins us now. Jeff, good morning. Thank you so much for being with us. And I want to start with you here. What's your reaction to what Ohtani had to say?
You know, Molly, as he was going through the facts and laying out his story, it really aligned with what Tisha Thompson had written originally about that version of it. But to me, the part that stood out most was at the end. You don't see Shohei Ohtani get emotional very often. And to see him say that he was beyond shocked, to accuse Ipe Mitsuhara, who was in his life as much as anyone, of lying, I think it really spoke to how he feels about this and how betrayed he feels. And look, as the investigations unfold, the federal investigation that's going on into this alleged bookmaking ring, Major League Baseball's investigation, we're going to get a greater sense of what the full truth actually is. But the truth, as Shohei Ohtani told it, made something abundantly clear, that in this case, in his story, he is a victim of, as they deemed it, a massive theft.
Shannon?
Everything that Shohei Ohtani said could be true. But guys, we've all been to the bank. We have a little bit of money. You know how hard it is to wire money from an account. Now, unless this interpreter had power of attorney, it's hard, it's virtually impossible to wire the kind of money that he was wiring to pay off this bookmaker. And like I said, guys, it's hard for me to believe, because I know the ring that they give me when I wire money. And it's my account, and I'm standing there. So you mean to tell me somebody that does not, unless he has power of attorney, if he has power of attorney, Jeff, Molly, I take back everything I'm saying. But for this man to pay off $4.5 million worth of debt with no power of attorney, and he's not on the account, he's got to be on the account or have power of attorney, or therefore it's virtually impossible for someone to walk into a bank. Jeff, do you think you can walk into a bank and wire $500,000, $1 million on my account? Even if me and you homeboys, Molly, you think you could do that? Your family member can do that to you? No. Come on now. Something ain't adding up, Jeff. And everything might be on the up and up. But something, if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't pass the smell test to me.
Let me just say one thing, Jeff, before you jump in. Completely playing devil's advocate. You said they had a very close relationship, right? That he was his confidant. He's his right-hand man. Uh-huh. Am I accurate in saying that?
Not only are you accurate in saying that, Molly, Shannon, I heard from a source yesterday who works with players in Asia who come to play baseball in the United States all the time. And he said, I'm really frustrated with a mischaracterization that's out there. This notion that Ipe Mitsuhara would never have had access to Shohei Ohtani's bank accounts. We have to understand the role that Ipe played in Shohei's life. Yes, he was the interpreter, but the interpreter was almost secondary to him being present almost all the time. And the notion that somebody in your inner circle, when you're going to a country that you've never lived in before, when you're dealing with financial people who you've never met and who to you look just like an empty suit, the possibility that you would entrust somebody who you've known for years and who had, prior to this incident, proven awfully trustworthy, I don't think is a stretch at all. I think it's a very reasonable thing to be done. And I say this because we have seen so many cases of athletes being defrauded throughout the years by people whom they trust. Now, a lot of times it's financial people. A lot of times it's family. Always it is somebody who is close to them. And in this situation, we don't know for certain if Ipe Mitsuhara had access to Shohei Ohtani's account. But what I don't want to do is discount that being a distinct possibility. And it's the sort of thing that we're going to learn, I think, as these investigations unfold. And specifically, why it's so important for us to understand to whom Ohtani's camp referred the criminal allegations. They have suggested that they've been in touch with law enforcement, but our reporting so far has not indicated which agency they've reported it to. Once we know that, we're going to have a better sense of who's going to be looking into the financial elements of this and what it's going to look like when we get those sorts of details.
Okay. Jeff, Shannon, I want to bring in Jessica Mendoza, who's been listening to the entire conversation. Jess, thank you so much for being with us. Just want to get your reaction to what you heard from these two gentlemen and also Ohtani yesterday.
You know, I thought, you know, Jeff bringing in Daniel Kim and the fact that giving insight, because I think everyone's reaction is, how does he have access to so much money, $4.5 million, being able to be even able to send these communications, these wire transfers? And I think Daniel Kim gave a lot of insight in the life of an interpreter and the amount of access that they actually have, which was very shocking to me. And the fact that you could know that much is being able, or not even know that that much is being. But to me, what I think the biggest question, and Ohtani talked about this, and the fact that Ipe had contacted his own representative, had contacted the Dodgers prior to him saying that he knew. So when Ipe Mitsuhara got in front of the team and was first revealing a lot of this, is when Ohtani said that he first found out any of this was happening. That to me is still a huge question mark, knowing, and even what he said yesterday, is that he found out prior to that Ipe had been reaching out to his representatives, had been letting the Dodgers know that this was coming, that Tisha Thompson had been talking to him, first of all, for a friend, is what Ipe originally said, not himself. But all of this was not relayed to Ohtani prior to that meeting after the Dodger game. So that to me is still a huge question mark. And the fact, if his representatives knew, if the Dodgers actually knew all of this was happening, even 24 hours before, that no one told Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, see, that's what I find puzzling also. And Jeff, you're right. I'm not saying that they weren't close, but without – normally people that defraud friends and are people that have power of attorney. That means if I'm a power of attorney, I can go in on Jeff Passan's account and I can withdraw money, I can wire money because I'm also on the account. And so without the interpreter having that kind of access, it's just hard for me to believe that he can get his hands on $4.5 million. Not $4,500, not $450,000, but 10 times that. That's 10x. It's just hard for me to believe. And Jeff, everything you say, what Shohei Ohtani has said, and even what the Asian community have confirmed to you, that when they come over here, they know very little English. They entrust the person that's coming along with them, be it an interpreter, a family friend, or a confidant, and they trust them to the upteenth. And so maybe he did have that kind of access to Shohei Ohtani's account. But right. Hopefully, that's what happened. He had that kind of access, and he betrayed the trust of Shohei Ohtani and misused those funds. I'm hoping that is the case.
Unc, what gets me here, though, is Shohei Ohtani told his story yesterday very firmly, to the point where if he's lying about this, in the midst of a federal investigation into a gambling ring, you are putting yourself in serious jeopardy. Like, it's one thing to pay off potentially a gambling debt or to get a gambling debt. It's another thing to lie about a federal investigation. Like, that's the part of this that logically, to double down like that as vehemently as they did. Like, you know, I was thinking about this. What if Ipe Mitsuhara hadn't told the original story that he did to Tisha Thompson about Shohei helping him out? If this story had from the beginning been just, you know what, it was a massive theft, it was all Ipe, which is essentially what they're going with now, wouldn't we maybe have even more skepticism and cynicism about it than we do at this point? At that point, it would be like, oh, no. Like, that's so clearly a cover-up story. But at this point, the way that it has transitioned from that original story that Ipe Mitsuhara told to what we're hearing from Shohei Ohtani right now, it does make it seem more plausible.
Yeah, I think sometimes the cover-up is worse than the crime, and this might be a situation because, like what you said, Jeff, if this is a, if he's lying, if Shohei's a lying, that makes it worse. It's hard to imagine you losing $4.5 million. You lying about losing $4.5 million is worse than someone taking it. But you could be onto something here.
Jess, I want to give you the final word here.
I just think that there was still a lot that I wanted answered. And I understand that there is still so much being investigated, but the fact that that access was able to happen, and I agree. I mean, being able to at least be more transparent on the access that Ipe Mitsuhara had into his account. I mean, there's just so much to me that I felt like needed to be answered, especially what transpired between the time that Tisha Thompson was talking to Ipe, and so much of that story changed. And from Tisha's word, being able to talk to Ohtani's representative, so many different people within Ohtani's camp, and that he did not know. I just think that there needed to be more questions answered, and there will be, obviously, coming forward.
That's a great point, because there's the gap in the story and how it changed, absolutely, which you just highlighted, and then also clarity on the access that he did have. Excellent point. You're right.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Celtics had their 9-game winning streak snapped and blew a 30-point lead in their first half against the Atlanta Hawks last night, falling 120-118. Crewed up at the moment, Tim Legler's in the house, Brian Windhorst gracing your screen. Of course, that's Shannon Sharp, and I'm Molly. Hi, guys. Shannon, what do you think about this blown lead? Is it something or nothing?
Oh, it's absolutely something. We've seen them blow leads of 11 to the Sixers, 18 to the Hornets, 12 to the Magic, 17 to the Warriors, 12 to the Nuggets, 22 to the Cavaliers, and 30 last night to the Hawks without their best player in Trae Young. This is absolutely something, because now teams feel like no matter how big a lead you get on them, they feel comfortable that knowing that you will mess it up yourselves and give them an opportunity to get back into the ball game. Now, we understand what the 3-point shot can do, but the Celtics got to be embarrassed by a lead of 30 without a team's best player. It was almost like what we saw last week, the Suns, when they lost to the Milwaukee Bucks without Giannis. To blow a 30-point lead, and look at all the leads. They've lost 15 times this season. I mean, 8 leads, 30 points, 22 points, 12 points, 11 points, 17, 12, 18, 11. That's embarrassing. This is absolutely something. And I want to see Wendy and Legs, you know, see if they can do a Houdini and escape this one.
Listen, I think there's two components to this, Shannon. I think one component is the complacency and distraction component. And I think that was part of last night. You're up 30. It's the Hawks. You got the one seed locked up. Huge gap for home court advantage. And they got a little bit sloppy and careless. I don't think that is a pattern with the Boston Celtics. But the second part of it is, which is this. Their shot selection at times, they take more threes than any team in the league. They can fall in love with that shot. And if they go cold, that is the formula to try to get back against the Boston Celtics. I think the numbers I saw this morning, they missed 16 straight threes in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock in the last three quarters of that game. So their offense, their execution, the quality of looks wasn't there. And if there's one thing that I think about with the Celtics, and I think about a vulnerability, and this is nitpicking a little bit, it is their propensity to string together three-point shots, possession after possession. And if you hit a cold streak, you can see teams erase big leads. Look, by the way, 20-point leads in this league don't mean anything anymore. No. But we see that on a regular basis because of the number of threes teams take both ways. Because if you got a big lead, you still take threes. You get a cold stretch, you're allowing teams to get back in the game. And then the number of threes that your opponent takes, down 20. Just do the math on it. You've got a more likelihood to make up that difference. Now, 30 is a whole other story. Teams were 152-0 up 30 this year going into last night. Okay, so it's the first time we've seen it all season. So I do think there is something to the style the Celtics play, allowing teams back in games because of the way they run their offense. I do think it's something to watch for in the postseason.
Okay, losing a game in, you know, late March, it's not that big of a deal, especially because Jrue Holiday and Derek White were out in this game last night. Here's what's a big deal for Boston. The way and what happens to their offense under pressure. Now, there's been a bunch of games this year, guys, where the Celtics have had a big lead, handled their business, and had no problem in cruise. They've got a lot going for them. They're awesome. They got the number one seed. But this is a team that has repeatedly, over the last few years, had games in the palm of their hand, had playoff series in the palm of their hand, or were in great position in playoff series and let it go. And they have a propensity, for some reason, to get distracted. It drives their fans crazy. I have watched it in person time after time after time in the playoffs over the last couple of years. The end of this game, watch this possession. This possession is infuriating. This team is loaded with talent. Watch what happens. There is nobody moving at all. Right under, if you can see underneath the 116, it says two timeouts. Joe Mazzulla just let this go. Nothing happens. Look at the shot that they get. If you're a Celtics fan, you've seen this play out time and time again. There was it's not something that you're saying is going to hold the team back, you know, in a game against Atlanta in March, but it could screw up a playoff series when you have this happen. There's a stat that I think is very important if you're looking at the Celtics. In the first quarters of games, they are top 10 in the league in pace. They play very, very fast. In the fourth quarters of games, what you saw in that play right there happens all the time. They are second from the bottom in pace. They slow to a halt. This is a weakness. Guys, there's not many weaknesses with this roster. They have a ton going for them. And when they're at full power, they're awesome. This is a weakness. They slow down at the end of games. They move away from contact. We've seen Jason Tatum time and time again in clutch situations go to that fall away. The Celtics, it's very hard for me to believe that Boston is not getting to the finals. But if I'm going to present you a case, it's going to start with their ability to execute and play with pace in those late game situations.
But here's the thing that you guys missed. Both of you guys, could they get to the finals? Yes. But the question was, is this a problem? Absolutely. Legs, you laid out. Because they shoot the three, they make the most, but they also, if you hit a cold spot, you allow the team to get back into the ball game. So what happens in the playoffs? You get up 20. And all of a sudden you hit that cold stretch where you're shooting threes and you allow the team to get back into the ball game. So to answer Molly's question, both of you guys elaborated and went on and y'all filibustered and I allowed you to do it. That was your 3-4 minutes of talking time. But this is what Legs and Wendy is saying. This is absolutely a problem. They just went about a wrong way of getting home to tell you that it's a problem.
All right, let me get into a quick commercial break here, guys. We're up against it, top of the hour. We'll come right back.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.